This week on Thinking Inside the Box, we wonder what you're doing in our swamp in Shrek. Hello, everybody. I'm Excalibur.
And I'm your co-host, Soft Mike.
Today we are reviewing Shrek.
Yes, Shrek the video game. You heard it right. This game is a... what would you say this game is?
I would say it's a very unfaithful rendition. Definitely unfaithful. About the only thing Shrek in this game would be Shrek himself. And that is somewhat poorly done.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. It is a very poorly done game. Made in less than a year, but in matter of fact...
Yeah, it was a rushed project, and it shows. All right, so our summary for Shrek is, every ogre needs some peace and quiet, even Shrek. Now that Shrek is the newly discovered hero to all the fairy tale characters, they have overrun his home sweet swamp and are begging for his help after all. He is the strongest, meanest, and greenest ogre around. In an effort to live happily ogre after, Shrek embarks on 36 missions in 4 never-before-seen worlds. A never-before-seen might be a good thing, though. Judging by the design of these worlds, it's best left unsaid.
Soft Mike, I'm just saying, I agree. You know, it's a very poorly designed level concept, to be honest. Yeah, it was very hard to actually play the game.
And the camera didn't make it any easier, but we'll get there. We'll get there. The game was developed by EA Dice. Publisher was TDK Media Active. This game's general features are single player, 480p resolution, and Dolby 5.1 surround. It's another impressive audio codec for a game of this time. It really was undeserving of something like that, but anyway, it is rated T for teen, and it is a action platformer 3D. Released on November 14th, 2001, for only the Xbox. It was an exclusive.
Now, I'll make an addendum on that. It was released again for the GameCube.
True.
It had a port to the GameCube. I'm not sure what exactly was the reasoning behind that. Maybe just because the Xbox market probably didn't do so well with the title. But I could definitely see that being a good reason.
Wasn't it one of the best-selling release titles for the Xbox?
Actually, I remember you did look into that.
Shrek was the 9th highest-selling Xbox game for the month of November.
Okay, so just for that month, okay.
For the month that the Xbox originally released, it was the 9th highest seller, selling an estimated 2.6% of the console's entire revenue. Basically, for half of a month, it was the 9th bestseller. That's not really any claim to fame. That's like top 50%, because there was 20 release titles, and it's the 9th, so it's about top 50%. This game's plot is very generic. It's like a Shrek ripoff of Super Mario, and that's pretty much where it stays.
Yeah, I would say I have the same kind of perspective here with that type of answer. It's just the game seems to play well. It just wasn't designed very well. It wasn't thought through. It wasn't given enough time to really get the features it needed to make it a real AAA title type game. So let's go into the publisher and developer info. All
right.
So our developer is DICE. Which at the time, the full name is Digital Illusions Canada Incorporated. They're based in Ontario, Canada, and it's a Canadian division of the Swedish DICE, like the headquarters. So the main company was acquired by EA in October 2006 after a courtship since 2004. The Canadian division was closed because EA already had 3 divisions in the country at the time, which would be the Montreal branch, the Vancouver, and the Burnaby branch.
Seems like almost everybody has a Montreal.
Yeah, it's a very popular city. I think there's quite a bit of video game developing companies in that city alone.
I believe the biggest in Montreal would probably be Ubisoft.
Yep. That is probably the number one company there. More background into DICE. We have many of the staff were interviewed for new positions at EA, and the main activities of the studio were moved to the DICE headquarters in Stockholm, Sweden. The former CEO, Fredrik Liljegren, went on to found the Red Jade company and took a lot of employees with him. Red Jade now creates art for console and PC games. Lead designer Armando Marini founded the Tusk Interactive company as well. Which, I guess, the Tusk Interactive company, they opened its doors in January 2008, started hiring. Marini self-funded a team of 8 people to work on a new IP. It didn't go well, and the studio closed in July 2008. So Tusk Interactive was a touch-and-go company.
Wow.
So basically, he tried to do his own thing, and he didn't get anywhere with it. So that's kind of interesting. So now on to the publisher. We have TDK Media Active Incorporated. They're a division of TDK Corporation. They're initially made up of BWT Labs Incorporated and Sound Source Interactive Incorporated, and the name TDK Media Active was first introduced on September 11, 2000, following the acquisition of SSI. In December 2003, it was acquired by Take-Two Interactive Software for about $12.8 million. As a result of the acquisition, the company was renamed to the Take-Two Licensing Incorporated.
Interesting.
Very. So, is there any trivia or anything about this game?
Well, as far as this game goes, it was very devoid of anything remotely interesting. it was, like we stated already, a very unfaithful rendition of Shrek. It really just bears the name and the model of Shrek himself, and that's about as far as it goes. There's a couple of things that might be considered an asset, but that's it. As far as the game itself, from a development standpoint, it did use a very interesting technique, which we were very surprised to find out this game was the first of its kind to actually implement this technique, which is called deferred shading. This is the first game to use this process, which in the field of 3D computer graphics, deferred shading is a screen space shading technique that is performed on a second rendering pass after the vertex and pixel shaders are rendered. It was first suggested by a guy named Michael Deering in 1988. So I guess it's been in theory for a very long time, but this game was the first of its kind to actually use it. And it executed it pretty well. It's almost unnoticeable, in my opinion, but you can see it working in some places. As far as the process works, what it does is it renders the actual objects first on one pass, and then on the second pass or second frame, renders in all the shading, which increases the amount of bandwidth of memory on board that a console or a computer or whatever that is using or rendering this game has on hand to help with performance. It seemed to have done a good job, except for when there's multiple explosions on the screen. That's when you can tell that its limitations reached. It seems to reach its limitation very quickly. But it's a cool, fun little tidbit about this game, about the fact that it was the first of its kind to use this.
Yeah. So, all right, now it's time to move on into our first segment.
It's time for the X-Ray, where we dive into the main features and in-depth gameplay.
Okay, what you got for us, my man?
All right, well, first thing is we should probably dive into the startup. What are we greeted to when we start the game?
Mediocrity.
Yeah. The first thing you see, as always, is we have our publisher, developer, and we even have the licensing IP holder, DreamWorks. They come up with their logo screens, and then you're graded to your main menu, essentially, or the beginning to your main menu, I should say.
What I want to call it in this game.
So yeah, how would you describe this main menu?
Well, you had the starting point where the companies unveil their little logos and their little flash video of themselves as their credit take from the beginning. And then once you get through those, you're greeted to Shrek on the screen in word form with a Shrek 2001 DreamWorks LLC copyright mark thing, trademark underneath that or whatever, and then an animated press start, big graphic on the screen with X for credits, which you never want to use either one of those. And the back image is a very, very lazily placed image of just Shrek himself from the movie in the early part where he's pulling wax out of his ear to make a candle with. It's just a very lazily put together menu. It's even worse when you hit start because you're greeted to just a vulgar burp sound. And it's basically one of those generic sound effects. It's not really anything spectacular. Then the second menu, once you press start, is some like snot graphics that show you your game saves. And then once again, the back image of this menu is just a still image from the movie of Donkey's girlfriend Dragon when they first meet her in the castle and she's beginning to chase them down.
Yeah, it is definitely a menu that made you sort of grit your teeth in terms of how well it was put together, so to speak. It was definitely a lazy, quickly put together type menu with terrible background photographs.
No effort.
I don't like the menu at all. In fact, I'm glad to say that once you get into the game, you can't go back into the main menu unless you restart the console.
Right.
Or you finish the game.
But because once you get past that and you load into the game, once you get done with the opening portion of the game, which it throws you directly into, where you're greeted to the mirror from the movie and the mask in the mirror, who straight cuts to telling you that Fiona's been captured by Merlin.
Merlin.
Yes.
And Merlin the Wizard.
He goes on his spiel like he did in the movie, sounding like a reality TV show host or a game show host in a way, actually, when he describes Merlin's Dark Tower. It's comical, but even though it was funny and I guess kind of cute in the movie, it's definitely not in the game. It just seems like worn out, reused content versus nostalgic or cool or funny. What do you have to say about the opening area once the first cutscene and only cutscene in this game is over with?
Yeah, so as you pointed out, the cutscene in the beginning is the only cutscene for the rest of the game. And if that doesn't tell you slap together, I don't know what will. But
if you want to call the first one a cutscene, I think it's kind of a bad statement for this game because it seems like they cut the rest of the scenes.
They definitely did. There's no real context here. In fact, in order to find out more about the story, you have to go digging into research articles, and which to find out through interviews with DICE. The story takes place after the movie. And I was, assume that it isn't too long after. So, and the story is compounded over really seemingly nothing incidents. And the magic mirror tells you that Merlin, the evil wizard, captured Fiona, and that he made a spell that covers the land in fog. And the only way to uncover the fog is by doing good deeds.
Yeah.
So Shrek has to go do good deeds.
Very lame. Lame story plot.
Yeah. So, of course, once you finish watching this cutscene, you're in Shrek's Swamp as the beginning tutorial world. Which is really, there's nothing special in this entire game. There is nothing else you can do except the story.
Yeah.
And you don't have to do it all, but you have to do at least 50%, I guess, of the total.
What's crazy is the game percentage-wise, when you start up your save, if you complete all of the missions in the game, all of them, in every world that you get to go to, you've only completed, I believe, 57-58% of the game.
Yeah, it's something like that. I think it has. I thought it would be like 50, because you have to unlock race mode in order to continue going forward. So
let's talk about the opening of the game some more. Once the first cutscene's over, you don't really get much context from it, or, you know, story, except for Fiona's been captured, and you got to train to do the three things that you can do, pretty much, to to defeat, you know, whatever stands in front of you.
Yeah, your basic control attacks, essentially, is how the game teaches you how to jump, how to move, how to move the camera, which I gripe about the inverted movement angles of the camera.
Oh, you griped at second .001.
Yeah, I was like, what, really? You can't change it, like, going into the options menu, which the menu is kind of crude itself. Oh, you know, when you hit the start menu and you're greeted to maybe like five options, I think. So, and one of them is a cheat menu, but we'll get more into that later.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a... I was very caught off, but at the same, you give everything a chance. You can't just start hating it right away. So, you learn how to jump, you learn how to fight, and then you also learn how to use these special attacks, which you can burp, fart, and then you can eat chili peppers, which allow you to spit out a flame effect, which you then can combo with your farts to make a gas flame, which and sort of creates like an explosion.
Yes, it's basically an explosion. You also have melee attacks where you can punch and you can kick. And then there's also grappling, where the grappling actually works really well. And it's hilarious when you
it's very funny.
There's also two different stages of any of your enemies. You can't kill anything in the game. Nothing can be killed, only stunned and then knocked out of the way, where you can either attack an enemy with a fury of punches or a fury of kicks until little stars appear around their head and you hear like little tweet birds going around. And at that point, you can grapple them and essentially have your way with them. You can beat the crap out of them, kick the crap out of them. You can throw them as far as you want. And you know, until you're bored of it, you can keep doing it. They'll never die. I thought that was somewhat entertaining for one of the characters that you encounter in the game, as he is a little annoying, and it was actually kind of fun to beat him around.
Yeah, I do like the grappling ability, especially because not all enemies also don't have the same knockout length of time, it seems.
Right.
Each enemy, there's sometimes ones that have a, like, 10-second knockout period. Some of them have up to 20, 25 seconds, just depending on the level you're on and what objective or purpose that they serve toward you completing the goal for the game.
So, like we mentioned in our overview of the story, there being 36 different missions. There is 36 different missions that you have to complete. And upon finishing the swamp, which I can say I was wrong about Shrek being the only thing that was true to the game, because the swamp is pretty accurate, actually. So There's that. And you don't even spend any time in there. So really, it was almost not even worth mentioning. But still, the fact that's something that's kind of true to the movie that's in the game, aside from Shrek. Now, when you leave the swamp, you're greeted to actually one of the coolest parts of the game, which is the overworld map, I guess you can say, or the world select area. When you get into that, you can run to one of two locations that are automatically open from the start, and that would be Sweetsville Industrial Park or Mother Goose's Land. Now, Sweetsville Industrial Park was a lot more difficult than it should have been for a starter level. I believe so.
Yeah, I was pretty agitated with it. I think it's somewhere between Prince Charming's Castle and Molasses Sewers.
Molasses Sewers by far is the worst one, but we'll get there. We'll get there. Yeah, I think I witnessed you lose your cool for the first time since we started this podcast series while playing this game.
Yeah, it's
quite funny.
I had made several expletives
yes.
via chat.
This is an expletive-inducing game, for sure.
It's sort of kind of a cringe fest in a way, because it's a game designed for teenagers. Right. And, like, this game is such a... It takes such a level of patience and a level of skill. I would say luck, even, that this game is not an ordinary game.
No, absolutely not. It feels marketed toward young children, but at the same time, the game is designed difficulty wise for teenagers. It kind of had a hard time being decipherable as to what they were trying to market the game toward, but. Definitely, skill is more intensive to completing this game, so I would say it's for teens, but the themes were very immature.
Definitely very immature. Pre-teen, maybe. Like 12 years,
say like
maybe 11.
Tweens?
Yeah, that's probably better. A better description type.
It's kind of like a middle school game, I guess.
PG-13 version of this game. Essentially, okay. Is what I would say.
Okay. Yeah, it's still either way, not great.
So, yeah, I definitely like the storyboard map, tabletop map, I should say. Which, the whole setup of this was the magic mirror, as you get to these spots on the map, they instantly teleport you to these locations, these fairy tale lands. And you're essentially a free-roaming ability on this map. You can do whatever you want. You can do the same control type as you can do in the middle of the tutorial or any of the worlds. You can move around, run around. You right. can eat. You can eat a chili pepper. You can do a lot of things. So,
so yeah, the overworld, the world select area, the really, it's a really cool and for the rest of the game, honestly, overly designed part of the game. I'm gonna assume here that you're on top of like Shrek's table in the middle of his house. I'm gonna assume, and you're basically on this map that looks like an old treasure map in a way, where those dash marks appeared behind you, those red ones that look like the route or path that you would take on a treasure map.
Yeah, like whenever you were moving on the map,
right?
They would show up. Yeah,
yeah. One would like appear behind you one at a time. It was kind of cool, and we found out that those also are explosive.
Yeah, tell us about that.
As you uncover the map, you find a random red chili hidden in the middle. Well, hidden in plain sight, just floating in the middle of I think it was Molasses Sewers and
Red Dragon Castle.
Wasn't it Prince Charming's Castle? It was right in front of Red Dragon.
Yeah.
And if you grabbed that pepper, it would make your flame ability start. And you could burp flames with those dash marks behind you and create a giant chain explosion. It was kind of hilarious to see it happen. And there was also chickens on the map, too. And being the way that I am, the way my mind works, I guess, I decided to see if I could throw the chickens off the map, since there seemed to be an invisible border at the edge of the map that's on top of the table. And I was successful in my mission. I ended up picking up a chicken, and eventually all chickens, and I threw them off the map. They somehow were able to barely clip through the invisible boundary at the edge of the map and fall down to one of the supports of the table. And I would just kind of like stand there and watch them and see what they would do. And there was more invisible boundaries down below, which was kind of odd. I didn't expect there'd be invisible boundaries down there too. But I did watch the chickens eventually walk off the edge, and it was rather hilarious because they disappeared from the screen.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have your little worlds that you go to with a single modeled portion of the world that kind of goes as a descriptor for where you're going to be going to. Mother Goose Land is a goose, I believe, on top of Fountain. And then you've got Sweetsville Industrial Park. It just looks like your old-fashioned factory with the smokestacks coming out the top. Those are the two starter levels. And then you go on to Creepy Crypt, which looks as like it's like it sounds. It's a kind of like an old, creepy, horror movie-style church that's kind of wacky and kooky in front of a cemetery. And then beyond that, you would go to Prince Charming's Castle, which looks exactly like it would. It's a castle. It looks like it's kind of nice and reformed. And then after that, you have Molasses Sewers, which is by far, I think by our vote, the worst level in the game. It's like a sewer pipe that leads into the ground, a giant one with a giant manhole cover or something like that sticking out the top. And then you also have Red Dragon Castle, which looks a lot like Prince Charming's Castle. And lastly, you have Merlin's Dark Tower, which also goes further to say Fort of Pure Evil.
Yeah, it was a lovely, lovely choice of names they chose for these levels. But they were definitely they were nursery rhyme orientated.
Oh, yeah.
So that was about the only thing that really stuck, was there was at least a common theme that each of these worlds possessed. So,
yeah.
Now, what's that? Each of these levels, now should we talk about the story of what these levels are? Well, you know, besides, we have to do these good deeds.
Oh, yeah, the specifics.
Yeah.
You know, another thing that's kind of neat is when you jump into each level, you have a storybook that's very intricately designed, like the storybook in the movie that references what the happenings are. And it was narrated by a female voice actor who did a very good job at narrating and filling in for different acting parts with different accents, and also accentuating her voice to match the emotion of the scene that she was reading. It was really cool to see that. It was another polished part of the game. I think that the most polished parts of the game were probably the overworld map and that portion. And beyond that, it was pure dull. But you have your standard six missions in each world that you have to complete. Two of them are the same in every single world map that you go to, but the first four are specific to each level. They range from burning rats by grappling them and holding them to torches. They also range to kicking prisoners held in a castle out of the dungeon's broken window, flushing gumdrop slingshot little gremlins down sewer pipes, and also grabbing fish in a drained moat around a castle and throwing them into a kiddie pool to keep them nice and refreshed in water. Do you have any missions that stood out to you, Soft Mike?
And for me, I really enjoyed the Prince Charming level. That was fun. Especially, as you said, the prisoners. That was fun.
Yeah. When you kicked them out of the glass window, and they would go, freedom!
Yeah, and they always when you picked them up at first, they would say, kick me out the window. Like, they were always, like, chanting something about being set free, or they wanted, you know, kind of hinting toward where you had to go.
Yeah.
And I remember Mother Goose land, that the eggs, I remember having to get the eggs and put them in Mother Goose's nest, or the Bo Peep sheep.
Yeah.
I remember, and there was some really interesting and unique design to each of these missions, to where it was actually fun completing the four standard missions, or not standard, but you'd have those missions for each world that were specific to that world. And it was always a fun to try and complete them, and you sort of attributed how that particularly translated that story of the nursery rhymer, how it even maybe affected Shrek from the movie. So I really enjoyed the unique character design and story elements they tried throwing into each chapter.
Yeah, definitely. A little bit of work, I guess, can say, went into each one of the missions that are in this game, as far as the first four. The fifth and sixth mission were always capturing extremely rage-inducingly hard fairies to catch in some levels. And then basically just hidden in plain sight golden eggs that were just part of like a greedy narrative, but were considered a good deed at the same time, so you did them anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was definitely, it had a really intricate purpose.
Yeah.
Why you had to do each of these objectives. I think once you understood how it worked, the rest of the game, you pretty much was able to figure out there, you know, what was something that you could do.
Yeah.
Especially once you set your mind on, like, the narrative of the storyteller from the mission briefing, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. The narrator telling you what you had to do. I actually laughed a little bit at that. That was actually entertaining enough to make me chuckle a little bit. One thing that was particularly irritating about this game was the fact that whenever you completed a mission, you had to go back to the overworld and then run back to that world and select the next mission.
Yeah, that was definitely not something I really thought was a good gaming move. Like, they should have made it so even in story mode, it had the ability to just keep playing and complete the remaining objectives.
Right.
Where you, instead of that, you can only complete one at a time, and then the world has to basically be reset in order to continue.
Yeah, I would find myself accidentally completing the same mission over again, not knowing that that's how it worked. So I wasted a lot of time doing that. And another thing about it is, if you completed a mission in the game, you got like this very lazy, once again, good job on the screen, and like a little ting sound would play, and Shrek would just go into this looped animation of throwing both of his arms up in the air like, yeah, yeah, and you couldn't hear anything. There was almost no voice acting in this game whatsoever. It was very generic when you beat a mission, and it just didn't feel like you actually accomplished something.
Yeah, I definitely had the same type of reaction, where it didn't give you a real sense of accomplishment for beating the level. Although, completing it definitely made you... There were some times where it was aggravating or frustrating in some of those objectives, so when you did beat it, it was a relief factor that was sort of making you continue playing thing, you know, to continue moving forward.
So tell us all about race mode. You had the most experience with it and definitely unleashed the most expletives while trying to do so.
Dear Lord. So, yeah, I have a fun story I'll get into later about race mode, but I will give you the basic rundown of it. So race mode is a extra mode that you gain access to after you complete 4 good deeds in the story. When you get access to this, you then have the ability to switch while on the tabletop treasure map mode. When you're on the ability to select whatever level you want to go to, you can switch to race mode. What that does is it allows you to go back and complete already completed deeds that you've done in the story mode and attempt to beat them in a record-setting developer set times. And honestly, it is probably one of the hardest type of timing events I've ever had to do in a video game.
From the sound of when you played, it definitely seemed like it was one of the harder time trial modes or whatever that I'd ever witnessed in a way. You definitely had one heck of a time completing the missions in the given times restraints.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, you would definitely, it was a strain to be able to complete some of these objectives. They would give you such a little amount of time that if you made even a 2-second mistake or even a 1-second mistake, sometimes you had to once again replay the mission. And of course, when you fail, you're launched back out into the treasure map, the map screen.
Right.
And you had to travel all the way back to the location of where you were just doing it and attempt the map again through the storybook. So yeah, it gets very repetitive, but it gives you a real sense of completion when you did beat the race mode objective.
Yeah.
Just because that they're just so difficult.
You know what, you're right. I tried a couple of them myself just to see why you were getting so upset. And honestly, I can say the same thing. You do get a sense of accomplishment when completing the missions under such a strict time constraint versus just completing them outright. Yeah, completing the missions in the regular story mode is also aggravating and antagonizing, but overall, there's no time limit. You can take as much time as you want to finish a mission. If you can't find something, okay, keep circling around until you do. Fighting the camera is another thing, but as far as the time trials mode or race mode goes, it's ridiculous. It's over the top, and you would have to be insane to really try to finish all of the time trial mode missions. It's almost impossible in some ways. It's very daunting.
Yeah, I remember I tried convincing you to let me continue playing the race mode because I would stick so much of my time completing a specific thing in the story mode, then going back in race mode and trying to beat it at the race mode challenge. And there, I was able to do 11 of the 37 total good deeds that you could do. And, of course, the last one I was trying to do was the Hidden Egg Challenge. So, I'll go into that story briefly, you know, later. But
One funny part when we were doing our playthrough together. I had finally talked you out of continuing to do it anymore. And then about 5 minutes later, I'm in molasses sewers working on my good deeds. And all of a sudden you start cursing again. All of a sudden I'm like, soft bike, what are you doing? And you try to give some kind of an excuse as to why you kept doing it. It became kind of addicting, I guess, to try and beat the time. I get that competitive nature that it brings out, but It was just kind of funny that I caught you like right after you said you were done and you were just going to start completing the missions again to try and get through the game. You went right back to race mode and still tried it again, and the frustration gave you away.
Yeah, I definitely was trying too hard. There's a lot of that competitive aspect where you try to beat something and you get so caught up doing it that the amount of dedication you put toward that task, it starts to sort of transform your ability to think outside of that realm. Yes. Where until you complete the task that was laid out before me, I couldn't continue. Yeah. I had to beat it. Now, of course, eventually, yes, I did give up. That was only due to the fact that when you have something where we have to try and, I guess, get the breadth of the world we're in, not just can play it and 100%. I mean, I would love to be able to play every game that we're going to review. That's going to be very hard for me to do and try and 100% it if I can. Some of these games, it's possible. We've done it a couple times, I think. Sometimes we have to, or I'd say most of the time, we have to end up using some type of exploit, such as a trainer or something of that nature.
Yes. Yeah,
to help us out, because we can't possibly sit through that patience level of playing this game nonstop. It's impossible to complete them 100%. You're gonna have to do that. We're gonna have to do the best we can. So right. I think we did good. So,
all right. So the camera is terrible. Bad.
That is to say the least.
Horrific. Mediocre. It's
idiotic.
It's a bad camera. It fights you all the way. It stays pretty decent as you go through the game, but if you need it for anything, or to see somewhere, or to complete a goal, you're on your own. It fights you all the way. And when you're trying to perform complex maneuvers in order to accomplish a goal once again, you're going to probably fail them or have to figure out a way to, without seeing what you're doing, make it happen. And you're going to have to repeat that over and over again. I think the best example of that would be in Creepy Crypt, when you had to knock out the skeletons and then toss them into the location with the speaker so that they could listen to music. That was probably the worst thing when it came to using the camera, in my opinion, mobile going through that game. What do you got?
Yeah, I really hated when I had to go chase the fairies down.
Oh,
because the camera was just... It would never catch up to where, like, you sometimes you lose the fairy. It was right. it was so hard to track because the fairies would take off faster than the camera could move. And Shrek moves incredibly fast, like way faster than he actually should be moving. Right. I think that's another oversight, is that when you sprint in this game, which you have a sprint ability, and right off the bat, Shrek moves like almost where I would say would be the proper sprinting speed. But then you have this ability to go absolutely like the Flash mode. Like Shrek turns into the Flash and he moves three times faster.
Yeah, Shrek's sprint ability is definitely an OP function, I believe.
Yeah, and nothing can keep up with him.
No, nothing's faster than him. That's strange, because usually you're not faster than anything else. You think with a sprint ability like that, you would have to like race something in the game, or run something down in the game, but they didn't utilize that one bit. Sprint is like a feature that's completely unutilized in that game, aside from catching the fairies.
Yeah, it's definitely that in race mode. I mean, it's the only reason why I see it even making race mode is about the only reason I think that ability exists.
Yeah, true.
Because otherwise you wouldn't be able to do any of them. So. Right.
So
yeah, I definitely agree with that.
That's pretty much it for the features of the game. The controls were pretty responsive, very solid. There just wasn't that many controls.
Yeah, well, what did all the buttons do? We had the left trigger, was Sprint. Right trigger was the focus camera right. ability, which weird. Y was your punch.
Y was punch.
X was kick.
B was grapple. Then you had your black button,
jump,
which was fart.
Yep.
White button was burp. A was jump. You sprinted or crouched with the left trigger.
Oh, yeah. If you're standing still, you'd crouch.
Yes.
The left trigger was the movement stick. The right was your camera control. I don't think the D-pad did anything. We had no online research for manuals, so not knowing the full control scheme. Sometimes in these games, it's going to be challenging on that aspect, not being able to see what exactly the controls, because some games poorly describe what controls are supposed to do.
Right.
We've experienced already with most of these launch titles not explaining what some controls do. I think, to my knowledge, the only games that have done it so far are 4x4 Evo 2 and Air Force Delta Storm. Obviously, that's the only other two games, but Shrek did not tell you what you had to press. Sort of had to, figure out through the tutorial mode. No, but other than that,
wrong. It definitely did not teach you anything about how you operated the game, other than in your very short tutorial that was also very vague.
Yeah.
So poor execution once again. Kind of a weak list of launch titles so far, but playing this game, it wasn't terrible. It's not one that I would say to stay away from. It's just not good. It's not bad though. It's kind of neutral. And there were points of the game that made me laugh, and I did enjoy it here and there. Some of the missions were kind of quirky and funny. The wall jump ability was kind of cool. That really came into use in the end of the game for sure. It was almost something that you didn't even need to have in the game until about the end. And that's when you were constantly using it.
I think that covers all of our
we're
ready for feature the next list. Segment. I think so. Let's move into our next segment.
Get ready for X Marks the Spot. The comprehensive look at game secrets and Easter eggs.
What do we got for Easter eggs and game secrets, my dude?
All right. For this game, I should say Easter eggs wise, really there isn't anything specific. We have a very, as the game has been so forth told, we haven't really had much. There's really not much to go off of besides the missions. There's not even collectibles really for the game, outside of what you normally had to do. And the game had the potential to do so. Trust me. The level design would have been excellent to have some type of collectible or something to get. Just never happened. So, unfortunately, you're stuck with a cheats menu. The cheats menu is available when you press start in either story mode or race mode. You get access to the cheats menu. You have to purchase the cheats menu by gaining money, which the only way to gain the money is by completing both a good deed on a story mode and race mode. So you have to complete it entirely, 100%.
Yeah, you have to 100% each mission, which, as you described, completing it in story and in race mode, which is a pretty daunting task when you think about it.
Yeah, and that, it's no joke. Anyone that's ever been able to complete this, we'd love to see a playthrough of someone doing this, because unfortunately, there is no one out there that has been able to do a walkthrough, or that I've found, of race mode completion. It's just not existing. I could believe it 100%, because nobody in their right mind would sit there. It's sort of just like speedrunning. In fact, you have to be speedrunning good in order to do these tasks.
You'd have to spend a lot of time honing your skills playing this game and getting familiar with how it works to be able to come close to completing some of these missions that are time constrained. missions in race mode. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you'd have to be game adaptive. You'd have to have completely mastered the game's feats and challenges, know the level design, which is actually very easy to understand how the levels are. Once you play through the story mode, it's just executing a specific pattern or a way of doing the race mode objectives is where it gets frustrating. Because, like I said, there's some times where race mode can get out of hand and you have not exactly a direct line. There's just an alternative route that has to be discovered. You almost have, as I put it, have to have a advanced IQ puzzle solving skills in order to be able to figure out how do I complete this in the fastest way possible. Like, what is the most efficient way to complete this? You have to think linearly of how to do everything. And you're always in the same starting spot. So you have to basically figure out where to go right off the bat. So, but in the cheats menu, you have, I think, 14 cheats.
Yeah, I believe you're right on that one. You have infinite flame, infinite gas, invulnerability, super strength, super flatulence, slow mode, fast mode, low gravity, money for Merlin, which I think is just them stealing money from you and giving it to Merlin. So if it is the case, I think you permanently lose that money because I don't think you can earn the money back if you complete the mission again. You have chalk mode, crude oil mode, plastic mode, cyber shadows, and that is all 14 cheats.
Yeah, and if you think about it, there's only 37 total missions.
Right.
So, and every time you beat those one of those, you get $1. So you only have $37, whereas you have 14 cheats, and each one costs $3.
Yeah.
So doing the math, you have 42 total dollars with 37 missions. So you got to be wise with five of those dollars you can't use. So you got to find the cheats that you're most willing to buy,
right,
and get those. But to no avail, because if you use cheats while playing, as expected, you get branded a cheater when completing something, and it's almost there for no reason at all.
Yeah, like you work extra hard to get the cheat, and then you're punished for it when you use it. It's essentially making you work hard to get punished.
Yeah. So with that, that's pretty much all cheats mode. Besides that, I do have a external help with this game. If you need any type of assistance, I recommend go on YouTube, type in a Shrek walkthrough for the video game, the user wishing to call. He has a long play of this game. He goes through and plays the game from start to finish in about 3.5 hours. It's going to take you a lot longer, probably. But he also has a subdivided mission in case you want to just find a specific mission you need help with. But he definitely has the most helpful video resource that you can find if you need help playing this game.
Yeah, this guy seemed very well situated where he knew this game and could complete it in that time frame. It's almost like it was its own speed run in a way. Not necessarily, but in a way, it seemed like it was. The person just definitely knew how the game worked and had played it at least multiple times before, or at least had enough experience to not get stopped by any obstacles in the game like we did for a long time. A 3.5 hour playthrough is pretty short when you think when I got to the end of the game and I was trying to complete Merlin's castle, which is ungodly hard. I wound up probably spending that much time alone in Merlin's castle.
Yeah, that was definitely that boss battle was a tough one.
It was actually harder to get to the boss battle than it was to actually do the boss battle.
But yeah, that's the fun part of it is, as always, the boss battle is always lackluster, but the getting up to the boss battle is more challenging. It actually ends up being in the finale. I think now we move on to our next segment.
Oh my god, he on X Games mode.
Are you ready? Here is the X Games mode. Our personal tales of triumph, adrenaline-pumping gameplay, and sweat-inducing rampages.
So I completely beat the Mother's Goose Land entirely with Rage Mode. And I moved on to Sweetsville Industrial Park. I started completing the timed race mode missions with that, and on my, I think the second one, I had to take the beat the slingshot gumdrop guys, and you have to kick them into these pipes. You have to be standing on a pressure plate when you're doing this, and there's only three of them in the level, so it's like, okay, easy. But you have 48 seconds to do so. The first one's right in front of you. You pick them up. You get them in within 5 seconds. Move on down to the next one. There's a second pipe that's right down this riverbed. You have to sort of go out of the way and get this other one, which is normally in the story mode, probably the third gumdrop. But with this, you know, speed running, you have to see the more efficient way. So I went and got him first, go to kick him in. However, I kept getting hit by the stupid chicken. There's a chicken that kept hitting. If it hits you, it'll peck you.
Oh, yeah.
And when you do that, you drop the gumdrop. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And oh, you would drop so the gumdrop. Irritating. No, yeah. In any point of the game, if you were carrying someone or something and you get hit, you're dropping them. Oh.
Yeah. And it was very frustrating. So, not only that, but if you didn't get hit by the chicken, there's the third gumdrop guy is there as well. And he might hit you with one of his slingshot hits.
Yeah.
And it's just as bad. But that's not the worst part. If you can get the second gumdrop in, you're on the home stretch. As long as you have at least more than, I think I calculated it was 20 seconds or so. And we had about 20 seconds. You had to grab the third gumdrop, get on this pressure plate, and then turn almost 180 to your left. And there is this rooftop. Which on the rooftop was another objective where you had to beat up this bully, so to speak. It was sort of like a mini boss battle.
Yeah, it took everybody's money, and he sounded really dumb, and he taunted you. I remember his taunt. His taunt was, "You're so dumb. When you butter toast, you put it on the wrong side." And I was like, laughing about that one. That's one of the things that made me laugh.
Yeah. So on this rooftop, you have this little boxing ring. Well, it's fenced off except for one part of the roof, which has a vent sticking out from the side that this is, it, you know, where you have to go. So you have to kick this third gumdrop up onto this roof, and it's not as easy as it sounds because you have to line up your shot just right. And it is very difficult. This is why one of the biggest issues is when the camera doesn't line up correctly. You can't get that accurate line up. So it took 50 plus tries, at least, to get on the roof. I had to get up onto this top. You had to do this wall jump. And once you did the wall jump, then you had to go grab the gumdrop and run across this vent. So the vent was only about trek wide. You literally only had just that small. It was a very difficult kind of run to get up on. And then once you ran up to the top, you got on the pressure plate and you kicked him. You had to kick him all the way over into the pipe. And it was a very difficult and daunting task. And if you didn't manage to mess up the wall jump, or I picked him, you know, I pick up the gumdrop and I go to get on the vent and I fall off. Or I pick up the gumdrop, get on the vent, start running, I accidentally press B and I drop him. Or anything of that nature, I eventually got it. And when I did, I had like 5 seconds left from the moment I got onto the vent. And this was like my 60th try. I'm sitting here just, I spent a couple hours trying repeating this over and over and over again.
It was something else. I think that almost broke you.
A couple times. And I dropped him in there with 1 second left. And there were a couple times I got to that point. I dropped him. He fell in at the zero when the timer ran out. So,
The game's concept of time, man, was very irritating. You could complete the mission with no time left, but you still failed because it didn't register that the goal was complete when, you know, the object entered wherever it was supposed to be or whatever happened. It wasn't by the game's standard, so you still failed. It still counted as if you didn't do it at all.
Yeah. So that is my ambitious story of adrenaline-pumping rushing action for this game. Now, what about you, Excalibur? What do you have?
You know what? I'm going to use the last level. I about quit the game because of it. I tried that so many times, and I actually got pretty good at it. I was able to manage breaking through all three doors and jumping up the parkour section to get to Merlin and start the final boss battle within about a minute's time. I actually broke that area down to the point to where I was almost speedrunner good at it. And I think my X Games mode was when I was able to grab the barrel, jump kick it to where it lit on one of the torches by the door and blew up to where I was able to drop kick the next one onto the platform, run it down to the end, dodge the arrow coming from the flaming suit of armor, and jump up at the torch at the end of the hall and light it and blow up the door, and then come back through and manage to get the other one on and blow up the other set of doors to get to Merlin. It was quite a triumph. It was quite the accomplishment to get through that entire process and to get as good as I got at it because of how hard it was. It was one of those moments when I got through, I literally about jumped out of my seat and started just yelling, yes! I had, you know, really gotten all hyped up and anxious by the time I had completed that task. So that's probably going to be my X Games moment. You definitely got tried. It was a trial by fire, literally.
Yeah. Now my question for you is: did you find the hidden health hearts in that level?
It took me quite a while until you said that there were hidden health in the second room, and that's when I decided to start looking, and I was able to find the health. But it was super hard to get to as well. You had to wall jump 3 different times, I think it was, just to get to the health, and you had to really be precise. And once again, with no help from that freaking camera, you had to manage pulling those off in order to obtain that health without falling down and getting shot at by Mr. Arrow Man or getting your butt kicked by the furniture that was capable of running almost as fast as you.
Yeah, those, I hated the table and the, it was a table and a chair.
Yeah, it was just too hard.
So, I think now is time for our last segment.
Let's get X-rated, where we rank the game based on our evaluation of 10 core gaming elements.
For the first category, we have our graphics section. I gave Shrek a 5 out of 10. That's because the game didn't have any impressive visuals, and I thought it was a good, solid middle ground line for most games, especially for this time of release. Difficulty, I gave it a 9, and that is because this game is egregiously hard, and there are sections where I don't even think the skill level required for this game is beyond the scope of normal gamers, for sure. Any normal gamer would have given up. And me and Excalibur, I would say we're seasoned gamers. We know pretty much everything there is to know about games for the most part. But we know for a fact that this game is definitely, for me, it was a 9 out of 10. Still beatable, not impossible, but there were moments where it would break you to your core whenever you failed. So that's why I gave it a 9 out of 10. The AI, I gave the AI a 4 out of 10 in this game. because this game, the AI had a pretty... It was much more intelligent than I've seen in other games. Well, not much more, but you can definitely tell it was more intelligent. The AI actually would overwhelm you quite easily, and they would chase you around, and they thought they did, their pathfinding skills were actually pretty impressive. But nonetheless, the game is still more of a silly-based title, so the AI wasn't programmed to be extraordinary in any way. So I think it's well-deserving for its 4 out of 10. Single-player experience. I gave this a 3 out of 10, and that's because this game didn't have much to offer. I don't think anyone playing this would, after they played it, think this game really was something they enjoyed overall. It's going to bring you a sense of sort of that's it, sort of like, is that it type of attitude? Was that all there was to it? But at the same time, you're sort of glad it's all said and done. So that's why I gave it a 3 out of 10. Design, I gave it a 3 out of 10, and that is because the game had interesting level design, although overall design, it was lacking that sort of progress. It didn't have much development, and I think it was due to a lot of the fact it was made in such a short amount of time. If it was polished better, this game would definitely rank up higher. So that is why I gave it a 3 out of 10. Controls, I gave a 6 out of 10. And that's because this game did actually have pretty good controls. Overall, I liked the way the game played in terms of your responsiveness and controls, as well as of the how they made the variety different. You didn't have a single attack button. There was multiple versions of attack. You had the grapple ability. There was a fair amount of sort of control playability in this game. So, and that's why I gave it a 6 out of 10. Features, I gave this a 2 out of 10. This game was lacking a lot of features. As I mentioned, the design, this game sort of just, it's going to be a sweep under the rug. There was a lot of potential for this game, and I think it was wasted on the fact that there was just such a short time frame that this game was trying to deliver on, being ready for this the Xbox release. Unfortunately, that's going to be a pretty big major effect on the score here. So that's why I gave it a 2 out of 10. Replayability, I gave it a 3 out of 10. And that is because this game really doesn't have much to offer when it comes to returning to play it. I could see a player that's played this game through and through. If you've just played this game to get from point A to point B without... Even if you just played the game and didn't complete every good deed, if you did that, your best bet, you're coming back just to get the remaining good deeds and then play race mode. And if you play race mode, you're psychotic. You must have a death wish because you're going to be spending a lot of time frustrated. You might be spending a week total of gameplay of just frustrating time. That's really the only thing you can come back for. And then maybe coming back after that even and playing with some cheats just to kind of poke fun at the game.
Yeah.
And that's why I gave it replayability out of 3 out of 10. Soundtrack, I gave this a 1 out of 10. The game had a very repetitive soundtrack, especially within each of the levels. And it was sort of so outweighed by the ambient play that you never really even noticed it.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, this gave soundtrack a 1 out of 10.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Storyline, we're going to give this a 1 out of 10. That's because this game lacked a solid storytelling experience. Besides the fact that the narrator did such a good job explaining why you were in, what you had to do for good deeds. Other than that, it really didn't feel like you were in the Shrek universe.
Wait a minute. It had a story?
Yeah, right? The story is there. Don't get me wrong. When you complete the game, you're greeted with a picture of Fiona and Shrek hugging.
Horribly.
That is it.
Horribly painted.
That's in like it.
MS Paint kind of style.
Yeah, there's no real conclusion to this other than that. And then you hit the credits scene. That's it.
Literally just, yeah, you beat Merlin. You don't even know that you did. There's no health bar. It's just fade to black. no audio. It's almost, you almost think that the Xbox crashed. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it's just an image of Fiona and Shrek, like you said. And it's not even a still image from the movie. Like, you'd think they would have stolen just another still frame from the movie, but no. They went through the effort of creating this extremely crappy MS Paint style drawing of Shrek and Fiona. And I think it's just like some cute little thing where Fiona's kissing him on the cheek or something. I don't even remember what it looks like. It was very forgettable.
Yes. And unfortunately, because of this lack, there's a set, even Donkey wasn't a part of this entire. And he was like the sidekick character to the show. So,
well, what's funny is the most reoccurring character in this entire game was that stupid little gumdrop gremlin slingshot thing that looked like an abomination.
Yeah, it looks like, from the gumdrop from Shrek 2. It's like the miniature version of him.
I don't even know how to explain it. It was terrible.
But yeah, so with that, all in all, add up all these points, I give this game a 37 out of 100, which gives the score rating a D.
Ooh.
So now, Excalibur, let's hear what you had to say about your review card for this game.
Well, if people say, you know, they're going to put it down, I'm definitely going to put it down. I'll tell you that right now. Graphics, first category, I ranked at 4. They were a little bit subpar. They could have been a little bit better. Models were pretty void of polygons. I think they could have done a little bit better with polish. And as well as other graphics go, they just seemed kind of muddy overall. So yeah, 4. Difficulty got an 8. It was definitely a trying game. And overall, as far as the gameplay goes, it was a difficult game. But also certain mechanics did play a role in causing it to become more difficult than it was probably intended to be. The camera is one factor, I would say. It fought you the entire way, as I mentioned before. And it was not an overall good fit. It just it felt weighty and large. It didn't feel like it was very universal and helpful. It made the game harder than, like I said, it needed it to be. So 8 was definitely fitting, in my opinion. AI got a 6. AI seemed a little above average, but not too much. They had great pathfinding, like you had said, and they were very precise with their attacks. I mean, it was stupid precise. Like I could jump through the air in a full sprint and still get shot with an arrow or flaming arrow. It was phenomenally accurate, the AI in the game. It was almost like an aimbot. So definitely deserving of a 6. Then we go to single player. Single player got a 3. Overall, it was lacking a lot. It lacked features. It lacked a story. It lacked graphics. It lacked sound design. It lacked a lot of things. And it really left you wanting more, like you said. This game wasn't very rewarding. It was more of like a hazing into the Shrek world or the Shrekverse. They could have done so much better, and they could have done so much more. Granted, they probably had a very short timeline to get the game out, and I understand that. So either way, there's plenty of companies that have done more with less. So for that, single player got a 3. A design, I gave a 3. Overall, it was just missing things. Sound design was absolutely atrocious, very generic. Some just plain sound effects were thrown into the game. Not much to go on. The graphics of each level, the design was just outlandish and inconsistent. There was a theme of jelly-filled frosted top donuts just in random places, and I don't understand the theme going on there. As well as just random pipes coming out of the walls too. It was a game that was designed to be something else, and they kind of just had to throw something together fast, and ended up tweaking a couple things and throwing Shrek into it to make a game. That's probably what happened if story be told true, because it just seems so far fetched the way that the levels are designed and how it has nothing to do with Shrek at all. So, yeah, design got a very low score for me. Controls got a 7.
A 7 seemed fitting because the controls were solid, at least, and reactive. They didn't seem to be jittery or glitchy. They were responsive, and they did what they were supposed to do. And on demand, they never really had a problem. So yeah, 7 was pretty fitting for controls. Features, got a 2. Obviously, I've covered this plenty of times. It lacked everything. There was literally nothing you could do. And only the things that could have made the game any funner than it was, which wasn't very fun to begin with, you got punished for engaging in using. So it was very much just a game that stuck you in the center and made you play it when you were playing it and didn't really give you much back for that. So yeah, that's basically my score on that. Replayability, got a 2. Maybe the only reason to go back and play this game, in my opinion, would be for the race mode. If you feel like being irritated and enraged, then this will definitely do it for you. Soundtrack, got a 1. Same score. It was very generic and very repetitive. It didn't offer much. And because of the kind of polluted amount of sound that was in each level, it ended up getting drowned out by what was going on. And it was also so quiet that you could lose the soundtrack and also, without even thinking about it, block out the soundtrack completely. I don't even remember hearing it half the time I played the game. So soundtrack is definitely a low score. And then story, last of all, I gave a 0. The story really was almost non-existent. It was so lazily put together, it didn't even deserve to be called having a story. It was more or less just a bunch of missions that you had to complete. It was like a puzzle game, I would say, more than it was a story-driven game because of the way it ended and the way it started. No cutscenes except for the one in the beginning, which was kind of vague to begin with. And then at the end of the game, it's just fade to black and a still image that could have easily just been stolen from the movie, like they had done with the menus, but they decided to just put together this mediocre attempt at drawing Shrek and Fiona, and that's all you get for finishing the game. And then if you come back and play cheats, you're labeled a cheater and punished. You know, there's no winning with this title. So overall, my total score came out to a 36 with a final score rating of a D.
That's awesome. Awesome, man. Very similar scores. I think this is a agreeable title here on
it's straight where trash. It lies. We had our fun moments, but it's a straight trash title.
Yeah.
Definitely could have had some potential, but it didn't show any of its true potential in this rendition of the game at any point. So I don't give this game any credit. It had its moments that it was enjoyable, but those are not worth picking up this game and playing it, in my opinion. I mean, you can play it. It's playable. It's not bad. It's not good. It's okay.
It's blah.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to notate before we sign off here real quick, though, is there was a glitch that I found in my hours of playing through Merlin's Castle. I found that the funny animation that Shrek does when he, air quotes, dies, he'll sit down on the ground and cover his face and do them and shuck his shoulders in a motion of crying. And one funny thing that I found is if he does that right next to an explosion, for some odd reason, he floats into the sky and the camera stays fixed on the ground. So basically, if he sits down on the ground and starts crying because he died and an explosion happens next to his body, like the barrel exploding next to him, the camera will stay fixed, but it'll look up at him and his legs will be outstretched and it'll look like he just floated into the heavens. It's a pretty funny sight. And if anyone's ever gotten to the end of the game or experienced this glitch, it's definitely hilarious. You could be as mad as we were getting at this game, and if that glitch was to happen, you would probably start to laugh at least a little bit, or it would lighten your mood, because it was just such a funny little glitch that was in this game. But that's about the only thing that we saw that was kind of a bug or a glitch.
Surprisingly, considering the low polish this game has.
Yeah, definitely. So
where does this rank now on our list?
On our rankings, our official rankings, our overall list from 1 to 864, 1 being the best title and 864 being the worst, we now have 3 titles to place in this. And I'm definitely going to say that this game belongs in the middle. It's still not, in my opinion, as bad as Delta Air Force thing, Air Force Delta Storm. I still can't say the name of that stinking game.
Delta Force Storm Air.
Yes, Delta Farce.
Yeah. I want to agree with you. I think it belongs right below 4 Evo 2 and above Air Force Delta Storm. I think this game, even though it's got a lower score than my Air Force Delta Storm did, I think this game actually brought more fun than Air Force Delta Storm did.
Yep.
So I agree. That's where I'm going to put mine.
Cool. So there we have it. It will be forever known as one of the worst games for the console so far, and still enjoyable. And also, don't forget, still better than Air Force Delta Storm.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for next week when we review
Arctic Thunder.
Oh, yeah. That one's going to be exciting. I can't wait to dive into that one and give you guys a good show.
Yep, it's gonna be a good one. So guys, I hope you guys stay tuned.
Yeah, definitely come and listen, and we'll give you updates when we're about to release the game. So make sure you tune in and let us know what you think about this show. If you have any experience or know anything that we didn't cover or have any kind of fond memories of this game, which we certainly do not, please write in. Let us know your thoughts. So until next time, I'm Excalibur.
I'm your co-host, Soft Mike.
We thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next one. Hello, loyal listeners. Excalibur here. Thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a supporter by going to our Patreon and pledging a couple bucks. Not only does this grant you exclusive access to early episodes and other content only available to supporters, but you also get to know you're making a difference by helping keep the lights on so that we can keep providing excellent content for you. Also consider joining the OG Xbox modding community on Facebook, where you can find anything you may need or want from the most trustworthy and quality-forward bunch of innovators keeping this amazing console alive to today. You can also become a part of the action by submitting a game for us to review via 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you may listen. Also consider liking and sharing our social media. You can find us on Twitter via our Twitter handle, ThinkBox Podcast, or on Facebook at Thinking Inside the Box. You can also write into us via email at thinkinginsidetheboxpodcast@outlook.com. Until the next time, thank you for listening, thank you for your patronage, and we will see you in the next one.